Welcome to the Pink Cloud Podcast. In this weekly podcast, we offer a supportive space where women share their personal experiences of getting sober and navigating sobriety while being young. In each episode, we deliver an amazing combination of heart-to-hearts and informative interviews with sober women without judgment. This podcast is about of necessity for like-minded women trying to seek and maintain sobriety while achieving more in their lives. Whether it's in sobriety, relationships, career, spirituality, mental health, or health and wellness. Created with sobriety, recovery, and sisterhood in mind, the Pink Cloud Podcast unites the voices of phenomenal women as we share deep and inspiring conversations of hope for a bright future.
Hello and welcome to the Pink Cloud Podcast. I'm your sober host, Lisa H., and I have such an exciting show today. I'm here with Gloria. She is celebrating 2 years sober this month. Yay, Gloria! And we're so excited for her to be able to share her story, her experience, strength, and hope. And so without further ado, Gloria, take it away.
Hi, Lisa. Thank you so much for allowing me to be on here.
Absolutely.
This is what a gift, you know, sobriety has given me many blessings, and this is a new one for me. So I'm really excited. June 23rd, 2020, I will do a shout out to my higher power because I was given the gift of desperation. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a high bottom. No, my bad. It was a high bottom, not a low bottom. Nothing really drastic happened. I was just sick and tired of being sick and tired. You know, it was years and years of drinking. I started drinking when I was 12 and I drank until I was 38. And there was plenty of situations that most people would stop drinking over. But for me, none of them mattered. And you can't quit. And you hear this all the time. You can't quit until you are really willing and wanting it. Mm-hmm. So no matter how much your family tells you, you know, the pleading, the begging, the broken promises, all of that, nothing ever mattered until I was completely ready and willing. Yeah. I am considered a Zoom baby. I got sober during COVID. I am a COVID baby. I got
shout out to the COVID babies, by the way. I don't know how you guys did it. I mean, getting sober, you have to be desperate to get sober during COVID and the Zoom meetings, because I'm telling you, I couldn't have done it. It wouldn't have been enough for me. So you guys had to be really desperate to get sober during COVID and Zoom and all of that.
So I work for a school district and we shut down in March. Mm-hmm. It was spring break. They were like, go ahead, enjoy your spring break. I packed everything and I stopped at the liquor store. I didn't stop at the liquor store. I stopped at like Costco and stocked up because I'm like, something is happening.
Yeah.
And I don't need toilet paper and I don't need water. I need tons of wine and vodka. And here I go, you know, and I came and I was prepared and spring break was over and we were able to work from home. And that mean I got to drink the way I like. You know, I got mm-hmm. to drink in secret in the comfort of my own home. I didn't have to leave. I definitely still lied a lot because my husband is an essential worker and he would leave in the morning and I would drink in the morning. And when he would come home, I would pretend to just be having my first drink.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's just what we do. I was doing that every single day, like right when COVID hit, every single day, that's the way I was living my life. And like I said, it was a very high bottom. I went on a bender and I couldn't catch. I was chasing that first high.
Yep.
And I could not get there. And I just turned really ugly and angry and desperate. And nobody understood what I was going through. Mm-hmm. And I have a lot of trauma and there's a whole bunch of stuff that I can get into. But I drank because I chose to drink. Nobody yeah. forced me to put the bottle to yep. my lips. And at the very end, I was drinking the way I like to drink. It just wasn't working anymore. And so that day I woke up and I didn't have it in me anymore to continue. My husband looked at me and he was like, oh, this shit again. He's a normie. He has like a beer at a basketball game with his friend.
Yeah. So you weird. Know? Yeah.
I'm like,
so I don't know weird. So weird. When I watch people, I observe people and they're like naturally like, that is so weird that you're having one or watching someone not finish a drink. It's like, people like that can't relate to our desperation because they could never understand. You just don't drink. Somebody who doesn't want to drink, you just don't drink. and that's it.
They don't. And I'm the one that's like, I'll finish that. I'll take that for you.
Yeah. Right. Like, you're not okay. Let me finish that. What are you doing? Why are you leaving that? Or before you're leaving somewhere, do you want to finish a drink? No, I'm fine. I'm like, what? I don't understand. I can't comprehend that. People leave drinks on the table and we'll just leave. Like, what? What are you doing?
When I go places now, I realize that, you know, I'm starting to hang out with some friends from my normie friends.
Yeah.
And they're just having like tea and water, you know, or coffee or whatever, soda. And I'm like, was I the one getting everybody shit faced? Like the minute I walked in, I was the girl that was like, shots,
you probably know?
And I got the party started, but that's part of the double life. They just thought I was like fun party girl. They didn't realize that I was coming home and blacking out on my couch every night. They didn't see what was happening behind closed doors, you know, and we live this double life. It's this perception. And it's this, like, I have to pretend I'm the perfect mom and the perfect wife and keep a clean house. Well, my house was not in order, girl.
Yeah. And everything on the outside might be fine, but it's almost, I feel like we try and do that to like make up for what's going on inside. It's like, now everything's fine on the outside. So as long as everything looks okay, it's like cleaning your house and throwing everything in the closet. You're like, someone's coming over. Let me sweep up real quick. Let me throw everything in the closet. Well, the reality is it's not clean. And there's stuff on the inside that needs to be dealt with. And once that stuff gets cleaned, then, you know, you can clean it on the outside. But it's like, yeah, we totally do that. Live the double life.
Yeah. And that's what I did. I did it for years and years. And I also was taught that, you know, it was like, we didn't talk about house business. We always just pretended that everything was okay. And if we looked good and we looked pretty and we used our manners, then we're fine, you know? And I was teaching my children how to live that lie also. So June 23rd happens. My husband's like, oh, this shit again. And for the first time in my life, I didn't have the energy to fight back.
Yeah.
I took it and I laid in my room, and honestly, like my higher power that day, it was no more like pleading and begging. It was really reaching out. It was truly God and the gift of desperation. Like I said, it was what I needed in that moment. He came home from work. He's like, you're still in bed. Said nothing. Move forward a few days. He's saying, I'm really worried about you. I still didn't have the courage to let him know that I needed help. Mm-hmm. Day five, I straight white knuckled it. I mean, I was like in my room dying. I had nothing left, like no body fluid coming out anymore. I was just living, you know, like on water and Pedialyte. And I felt like I was dying. My bones hurt. My body hurt. Mm-hmm. I have the sweats. I have the shakes. And I told him I was tired. And I said, I can't live my life like this anymore. And he looked at me and he said, I love you so much. And I didn't know how much longer I can live my life like this either. Wow. And that's his truth.
Yeah.
And the same with my kids, you know, they were pretty much, I have two older kids. I have an 18 and a 20-year-old. And one, it was very traumatic. And one was just, I was mom and I was embarrassing. So two different stories, but you know, functioning alcoholic with a lot of yets. You know, I didn't go to jail. Mm-hmm. I didn't lose my family. I kept a job. I kept a clean house. And so just high functioning with a lot of yets. A few days more pass and I reach out to my childhood friend. She's in the other rooms. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, hey, I need help. We met for coffee. She gave me literature. She was talking about the rooms and I'm like, what are these rooms you're
sitting at? You're like, what? Where are you guys going? What is this place? What is
that's what we call meetings. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, I'm not ready for that yet. My problem, you know, your pride and your ego stand in your way. It for took me about 6 months before I entered the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Yeah.
But because of COVID, social media and hashtags and just search Googling stuff.
Yes.
So first I was Googling like, am I dying? Is my liver failing? Like, you know, that was like my first Googling of everything. And then my second one was like just searching stuff on Instagram. And I found a really amazing support group. They also have a podcast and an Instagram and a website. It's Sober Sister Society. They had Thursday meetings. It was fresh. It was brand new. They needed something for women during COVID.
Yep.
I logged on. They saved my ass for 6 months. Awesome. There was women in those meetings, and it was small in the beginning. It was really small, but you knew the women that were working the program, and you mm-hmm. knew the women that weren't.
Yeah. Well,
my aunt has 35 years of sobriety. She has always 12-stepped me.
Yeah.
So I was given the literature. I was reading, but I was reading alone, and you shouldn't do that. I don't recommend that to anybody. Because first of all, no matter how familiar it is, because I've been 12-stepped all my life, like, it's still so foreign. Nobody speaks like that anymore.
You yeah.
You read it and you don't, you know. So one of the sisters on there, she called me and she was like, girl, you need a sponsor. And I'm like, I don't think I'm ready for that. No, I'm not an alcoholic. I just, you know, just right. Like
I just, well, it's like, okay, if you're Googling, am I dying? Is my liver failing? If you're Googling all of these things, then you're logging on, you're searching hashtags, right? These are all little steps. Yeah. Then you're logging onto a meeting. You're attending a meeting. Those are all things, but it's so crazy how alcoholics can try to justify not being an alcoholic by anything. Normal people just have one beer at a basketball game. That's what a normal person does. People who don't have drinking problems don't go online and search out support groups. Why would you sit in a meeting with other people that are crazy for an hour and hear their stuff, unless you're crazy? I mean, nobody does that and likes it. Nobody logs back on and likes it either. No one goes to another meeting unless you have a problem with it. So it's like, yeah, you have a problem if you're logging on, and you probably should get a sponsor, and you should do all of the things. If you're anywhere in the realm of searching or something, you probably have a problem. I mean, that's just like a flag. It's not a pink flag. It's a red flag. It's like, hello.
Well, and it's like in the book when they talk about like, well, if you can do A, B, and C, then you're not an alcoholic. But if you read all this and agree with it, definitely alcoholic kind of deal, right?
Yeah, I read about controlled drinking early on. So what do you know? I went to the bar and I tried that controlled drinking. So I'm like, it even says you can do controlled drinking. So I did. And my controlled drinking was, okay, I'm only going to have two drinks. So I had drink one, didn't really feel anything. I had drink two, and I was like, woo, I felt great. So then why not have drink three? So everything out the window. So I did try to control drinking. I tried it, right? I tried to step over to my local bar room and try control drinking. And I didn't even have just three, because by time drink, it's not the first drink that got me, it was the second drink, because the second drink, then I'm feeling a little buzzed. And then after that, then who cares? Then I don't care anymore, because I'm not going to try to control it, because I've left the building and this alter ego has entered my soul and is now going to run wild and do whatever I want. So then come back all my character defects, then came back all that behavior that I do when I'm drinking. When it just was an hour ago, I was sitting there like a normal person, not engaging in any of this. And then now I'm like running wild and like pure chaos again.
Pure chaos.
Like an alcoholic.
And yeah. I thrived in the chaos, and I love the chaos because it gave me more reason to drink. And my controlled drinking, I figured out, was just buying a bigger wine glass, you know, instead of I'm having to. The glass, like, you could put on top of my head probably for one bottle in one glass. I'm only having one drink kind of shit, you know, but yeah. That's how sick I am. And yeah. Now I'm, you know, recovery and working the program and doing the things.
So you did get a sponsor. So someone recommended. You get a sponsor. So you did, right?
So I got a sponsor, and okay. She's from where you are. She is in San Diego. Mm-hmm. And she was like, hey, let's set aside some time to talk. Let's just see if you are willing. Can you do what I ask of you? And we hit it off right away. I worked steps. I entered the Zoom rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Sure enough, first time I log in, I see a face I know. Second time I log in, I see two faces I know. And I built up the courage to walk into a physical room. And I walked in the room and the same thing happened. I still couldn't say, hi, my name is Gloria and I'm an alcoholic. You know, but I was also very tender, like very delicate. Mm-hmm. And yes. I opened my mouth and I cried.
Yeah.
And I still, and this is what happens, I think, in early sobriety. And I think it's really important to discuss is that we have all of this shame, fear, and guilt.
Yes.
And that's blocking us to hear the similarities. So we go into the rooms and it takes a minute without the guidance of a sponsor and really understanding the steps and what you're supposed to do. You're not listening for similarities. You're listening to all of the differences.
The differences. Yeah.
you know, and it's just like,
it's true. I went into the rooms, I was in my early 20s, and I go in there and people are in their 40s. They're talking about spouses and their husband and their wife, and they're talking about all of these things. And I remember it was one of my very first meetings. So I'm desperate. I'm like white knuckle. I'm just like gripping on because like my life was slipping away. And I'm like, I can't even breathe because like, I didn't even know what to do with all my emotions and these raw feelings I had. And there was a lady in there and she's talking about gardening. And she was talking and I'm like, don't you know, like I wanted to scream. I'm like, don't you know, I feel like I'm going to die right now. And you're talking about gardening. So I didn't know how, like, I guess how the rooms worked or how things worked in there. And I'm like, I needed somebody, but I was very delicate. I didn't know how to reach out for help. I didn't know all of those things. And so I'm just sitting in the room and like, just wanting to jump out of my seat. And this lady's talking about gardening. And so I was looking for the differences. So I did end up going back out after that, not because of that, but I don't relate. That lady's talking about this. They're talking about, I'm not that bad yet. Like I haven't done, because I was a high bottom drunk too. I hadn't done all those things yet. I'd never got a DUI. I hadn't done all of these things. And people were talking about this horrific stuff that they've done. And I didn't relate. So I totally agree with that. I looked for the differences and I differenced myself right out the door.
Yeah. And it's really easy to do that. And then I walked around with a chip on my shoulder. I didn't want to stay for fellowship. I didn't want to talk to anybody. I wanted to get in and get out. So my sponsor really carried me through the next 6 months, which equaled my year. We got through the 12 steps. We did everything via Zoom. I was marking everything off of the checklist. And I started secretarying a women's meeting in person. And that was helping me stay sober. And I think that's important too. Early in sobriety, get into service. It doesn't matter if you're just pouring the coffee, you know, if you are, whatever your sponsor tells you to do, listen, because I needed accountability. I needed a purpose. I needed to feel worthy again. Yes. And those things helped me feel like I was somebody. And if that just helped me stay sober that one day, that helped me stay sober that one day, because I have to show up to somewhere. They're trusting me with this key to open the door. Right.
Absolutely.
And that really helped me. And it helped me open up my heart. Mm-hmm. It helped me build relationships with other women. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I was angry at the woman that like had a great relationship with their mom. I was angry at the woman that like had a dad. I mean, I was just angry, but I never showed it. I just pretended that everything was okay because I was still really good at pretending that things were okay because of the double life that I lived for so long. So I realized that I wanted an in-person sponsor. So, you know, it's like you have this idea in your head of what you want. It's like you're shopping almost.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way, you know, because you're never going to find like what you think you're looking for. It's like, idea when you go and you like have this idea of the perfect shirt you're going to buy, you never find that shirt.
Yeah.
It has to happen. You just go and like, boom, there it is.
Yeah.
That's kind of what happened with my sponsor. A lot of people were suggesting people to me and I got the courage to reach out to somebody here locally and I called her and we met and she called me out on my bullshit right away. What I needed. And it wasn't mean. It wasn't harsh. It was loving.
The truth.
Caring. And my first sponsor was very good to me. Also, we're now really good friends. You know, they didn't use scare tactics on me. You know, they weren't like, you're going to die. And it was loving and it was caring, but they meant business and don't waste my time. Like, so I get my in-person sponsor here locally and she tells me just like this. She says, Gloria, you're calling me every day on the dot when you're supposed to. You're reading what you're supposed to. But you're just checking everything off the list. You are not really doing the work. Let me know when you are ready to do the work. And I was like, oh, shit.
Yep. Yep.
Like, here it comes. And we got into it. You know, I took what she said to heart because it was the first time that somebody actually called me out on my bullshit.
Yeah.
It was the first time that somebody just said, yeah, you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, but how are you feeling?
Yeah. You can check stuff off the list all you want, but she probably knows that because sponsors and people who have sponsored multiple women and see have the knowledge of the rooms, know people who come in and maybe just go to meetings and they sit in the meetings and they sit there, but then they go back out and they drink. So people aren't doing the work. So you can spot that. You can spot someone that's not actually doing the work. And that's what sponsorship is so important for, because people can see stuff that we can't. My first sponsor would call me out and things like, how would she know that? But looking back, I'm like, oh gosh, I look like an open book. I'm a textbook classic alcoholic. Of course, these behaviors are things that she's probably seen a million times in other people. And sponsors have done that themselves, right? So we've also done a lot of these things. So it's like, you can't BS me. It's like being a parent, you know, you can't pull tricks that I've been pulling for my whole life. You can't do that. You can't pull one over on the person that invented it, right?
Exactly. And, you know, she would tell me, like, because I'm an alcoholic too, Gloria. Like, I get it.
Yeah.
What's your part? Let's talk about that. We're not going to talk about twiddle thumbs today. I'm not worried about him.
Yep.
What's your part? So, you know, we got down to work and it was a different pace. You know, like year one was very, like I said, I was delicate. It was traumatic. Mm-hmm. There was, my whole life had to change. I definitely pink clouded, you know, for a few months, and that was great. And then once that was over, I felt like I had gone stagnant. You know, yeah. It just was like, now what? I'm not being celebrated every month, right? You're not getting that chip every 30 days that, yep. You know, and then it's this 1 year celebration. And I really just sat still. It was stagnant and I didn't know where to go. And it's a time and a place that people do go back out and drink.
Yes. Yep.
And I am like, okay, I need to work extra hard right now. And I am going to make this commitment because this is only going to help me be better. And everything in my life started changing. No joke. Like, my work life has improved so much. My friendships have improved so much. My relationship mm-hmm. with my husband and my children have improved so much, you know, and people recognize these things, you know, yeah. Like people are waiting for me to pop off when something happens. And like, my family, it took them a minute. They're like, wait, what's happening?
Why are you being weird? Why are you being weird? Right?
They're like, this isn't okay. Mom's supposed to lose her shit. And she's like,
what?
Let me step away and I'll come back in 5 minutes.
Let me step away and pray for you and I'll be back. Let me pray for the serenity prayer. I'll be back. Like, what? That's weird. What are you doing? You're supposed to yell at us.
You know, and they didn't know how to take it in the beginning, you know, yeah. And I lived on a short fuse for so long, and we live in that chaos and we live in that dysfunction because then we deserve that drink.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, I don't have to participate in that bullshit because I'm not going to reward myself with anything. If anything, I may just take my ass to bed.
Yeah. My reward is my peace of mind.
Yes.
My reward for myself and me not doing that is when I lay down my pillow and I constructively review my day at night, I close my eyes and I don't wake back up and I don't need to pick up the phone and call someone. I don't need to go pick up a drink because guess what? I didn't create any chaos today. Like, who would have thought?
Well, and then like the living amends now that I can do, you know,
yes.
It's like when I notice behavior in myself today that I don't like, I'm able, you know, sometimes to step in immediately. And sometimes maybe it takes me 24 hours because I have to pray on it and reach out to my sponsor,
yeah.
Whatever the situation, but I'm able to walk with pride and dignity today and no more shame mm-hmm. and guilt, you
yeah.
know, and it is that freedom from bondage of self. It is that place where you hear people talk about and you're like, when will I have that? But honestly, I don't think I could have experienced it without a sponsor, without the book, without the steps. You know, yeah. I couldn't be finishing year two where I am today alone, right? Yeah. I would just be dry and I would have a chip on my shoulder and I'd be angry and I'd be popping off and all of my old behaviors would still be there. And I
yeah.
realized this year, like, what happens before I pick up the drink? Because now I'm able
that's
to work.
Good. Yeah. Through,
right. And so like, there are things that are heavy and there are things in life that come my way that honestly, sometimes other people don't understand some of the things that I'm going through. Mental health runs heavy in my family.
Yep.
Addiction runs heavy in my family. You know, circumstances, what people, places, and things, they happen, right?
Yeah.
But it's really how we approach them, the good and the bad. So closing out this school year, one of my big projects everybody was warning everybody, like, stay out of Gloria's way. She's going to lose her shit. This is her thing. Don't, you know? And somebody came up to me at the end of it and they were like, I was really watching how you were handling everything. And I was preparing myself for something that didn't happen.
Wow.
And I was like, thank you so much. But that's what's happened in a year. Right? Like year one,
amazing.
Two, how I'm able to process and handle high level stress at work.
Yeah.
Without losing my shit. Telling my coworkers, like, you know what? Right now is not a good time. I have to step away. And sometimes that meant I had to go shed a tear or move a muscle, change a thought, or pick up the phone or jump in a meeting. I mean, whatever the situation is that I needed to get out of.
You've learned tools.
Exactly.
You learn the tools, you're implementing them. So those are all things that come now. Like now it's just a part of your working life. So year one is like crazy chaotic. You got stagnant. And then year two is like, oh, I know all these tools. I'm going to implement them. I'm going to start using these tools that I know. I'm going to step away. That is so great. Like just something as simple as I'm going to step away. And then what do I do next? So then what action do I take? So here's the thought. Okay, here's chaos coming. Am I going to have to make an amends to somebody else? Am I going to engage in that chaos? Okay, no. What am I going to do? Okay, here's my toolkit. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take these steps. And then the feeling passes too. We don't have to pick up that drink because that's what I want to do. Something went wrong. I'm like, I need to go grab that drink. I need to feel different immediately. I got to feel different right now. And I don't want to feel my feelings. So I'm going to go drink and it's justified because don't you know? And everybody that I told, whatever story it was, whatever happened, right? Totally justified. Like meet me for a drink. Oh, something happened at work. And it's like, yeah, you deserve it. They're so bad. And yes. And everything was always justified. I could always justify a reason to drink.
Pour me another drink. Pour me a drink because the sun is shining. Pour me a drink because it's raining outside. Pour me because my life is crazy. Pour me because I'm celebrating, right? Like pour me another drink. Keep it coming. And now I'm like, you're right. Like processing, feeling the feels, getting through the heavy shit, getting through the good shit, because that's also something you have to learn. Like I am learning that like sometimes excitement and the adrenaline from the excitement gets me feeling some kind of way. And it's uncomfortable. Even the good feelings are a little uncomfortable for me. And
well, especially if you drank over that, if that's a trigger, if that's something, if you drank to feel, if you were feeling good and then you drank, that's still in there. You know, our brains are such a complex mechanism. We do that. It's a trigger. It's like, boop. I'm like, oh yeah, this, I know what to do after this. This feels good. I'm going to feel better. And it's like, whoa, okay. Let me acknowledge that. Let me see where that's coming from. And let me just kind of calm it down a little bit.
And now with the tools that I have, I'm able to go like, okay, I'm feeling good. Okay. There's a lot of adrenaline. Okay. Now I'm tired. Now I could go to bed. Now I could eat a meal because I haven't done that yet. You know, just the halt like really stands out for me. So hungry, angry, lonely, tired, like paying attention to all of those emotions. Year two has taught me how to function in the world again. Mm-hmm. So here's the thing. I'm going to go back a little bit because I was talking about I'm a COVID baby and I got sober in the Zoom world, right? And so the world shut down with us. So when the world opened back up, we had to learn how to live life.
Oh yeah.
Right? We had to relearn how to go to that party, how to go into the work world, how to go into the doctor's office face to face. Like all of these things were
interesting. Yeah.
Right. So I'm so all of these things were opening back up with me and all of these things were my first. And year one with COVID, I used to host everything. I was a person that always threw the celebrations at my home because I wanted to drink more. And so the more people in my house, the more reason I had to party the way I like to. Well, when COVID happened, I didn't tell a lot of people that were close to me. I was embarrassed in the shame and guilt and fear, right? I didn't tell a lot of people that I was sober and we didn't have to host because it was COVID. So it was like, oh, we shut down. So I don't have to worry about Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year, birthday parties, blah, blah, blah. None of that I had to worry about. Well, then year two happened and I'm like, okay, the world's open back up. People are starting to do things. How do I fit in? And yeah. So here's another toolkit. So, you know, I'm invited somewhere. I never show up empty handed. That means I'm stopping at Starbucks before and I'm getting like the Trenta coffee because that will take
always. That's one of my tips. Always have a drink in my hand. Always at all times. Always, because I always walked around with a drink in my hand. I always had one. So if I always have one in my hand, people aren't going to ask me if I want something to drink and I'm occupied. It's my security blanket, my drink, right?
Yeah. So, you know, so like I'm doing that. And then it was like, okay, how can we get out of hosting something at my house? Okay, let's see who will be willing to do that. And I like the idea of allowing myself some grace during this period because I can show up to somebody's house and then I can have an exit plan. Because if I'm hosting at my house, the
can't
never end and I can't walk away. And so we would go and now I know when to leave. Like I never stay anywhere any longer. I'm like, oh, I'm done. Can we go? My husband's like so excited. He's like, yeah, get your stuff. You know, and I started recovering out loud. I haven't told everybody that I'm sober, but the people closest to me do know and they do respect it. Thank God I'm fortunate and blessed that I haven't lost people that I love because of it. You know, I've grown up with some of my truest, dearest, closest friends, and I love them to death and they support me 100%. And it's so beautiful to be able to still feel accepted because not everybody is blessed with that. So that is something I do not take for granted, but something that I am honest with is when I'm invited somewhere, because in the beginning they're like, we're not sure if we should invite you. We don't want you to feel uncomfortable. We don't want you to feel obligated. Like you need to let us know. And so something that I use that I feel is helpful is I say yes to everything. And I tell my people this, I'm like, I'm going to say yes, but I have to see how that day serves me.
Yes, absolutely.
So I can wake up and I can, so, you know, I have a routine.
And that's a healthy boundary for you too. That's something that's important too in recovery. We didn't set boundaries sometimes.
No.
Our boundaries, or they'd waver, or we had no idea even what a boundary was. So healthy boundaries for recovery is so important. It's like, you know, and I talk about that too, that there's sometimes things don't bother me. And then other times it bothers me and I don't know why. And it's not like, oh my God, I want a good drink. Oh, I can't stay away from the bottle. Sometimes it's just being in an environment where there's alcohol. Sometimes it will not bother me at all. Like I don't care at all. And other times I'm like, oh, I don't like this. I don't want to be here. And that's a boundary for me. And guess what? I don't have to stay. I can leave because that's my boundary and it's my recovery. And that comes first, period. Like, period.
And I didn't understand that, like, no means no. Like, that's a sentence. No.
Yeah.
And I don't have to explain myself to people because I'm definitely character defect right here is people pleasing. I don't have to explain myself to anybody. Mm-hmm. When I leave and if people are drinking and partying, trust me, they're not worried that I left.
They don't know. They won't know.
Right?
They won't know. Like, what? And you just tell them, I was there. What? What do you mean? I was there. It was late. I saw you. I was there. Don't you remember we talked? Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
You know, so no is a sentence. You know, I am able to say that without any explanation. People pleasing. I'm still working on that, but I'm better at not like explaining myself. But I say yes. And if that day isn't serving me, I just, you know, I am tired today. I overexerted myself. Sometimes, honestly, I am just not spiritually fit. And, you know, my sponsor will talk to me about that. And she's like, and that's okay. Like, do you want to go and eat dinner with your friends? Or do you want to talk to me on the phone and let's figure out what's going on? And sometimes I don't want to do either. I'm like, damn it. I just want to go home and go to bed. And in early recovery, and I feel like I'm still early, I need that. Like sometimes it is minute by minute, you know, just that 24 hours. And I can come home, I can go for a walk, go for a jog, take a bath, eat something not healthy, you know, put on some TV that doesn't take a lot of concentration.
Yep.
This noise in the background, listen to a podcast. You know, there's so many things that I can do to preoccupy my time. But what I'm realizing now is that I am slowing down. I have summers off. I really am learning to sit with myself in silence. In peace, I'm learning to feel my feelings. that's really uncomfortable. I am not good at crying. I have done that a couple of times in the last couple of months, but I block myself from it. And so I am going to be gentle with myself right now. Mm-hmm. I'm going to allow myself this time and this peace that I need with my higher power. I've taken up prayer and meditation. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm doing these things to help me on a daily basis. And I'm no longer living in fear. You know, I'm no longer living with that shame and that guilt. And I'm showing up for people that matter. But I think most importantly, I'm showing up for myself. And, you know, I didn't learn how to do that until I was 40. You know, and I'm like, damn.
And
like,
you are doing it. I'm telling you, Gloria, you are an inspiration. I mean, you are 2 years sober, but you are like a full embodiment of sobriety and the right way to do sobriety. There's no right way to do sobriety, but you're doing it right. Sobriety should be messy. It should have ups and downs and learning, but you are such an inspiration and your story is just amazing. And we touched on so many great topics in just this one small, like your story. You just like encompass full sobriety and I love it so much. So I am so thankful that you said yes and that you were spiritually fit enough to show up today for the podcast and that you shared with me and with the world your story. So thank you so much. Before we log off, is there anything that you want to let our listeners know or any little takeaway or anything at all you want to have the listeners know before we log off about your 2 year journey?
You know what, Lisa? I'm really going to be honest. We spoke the other day for the first time and you were talking about doing our best. And that's what I am just going to strive to do is mm-hmm. to do my best. Who's here to judge me? There's nobody judging you. We need to learn not to be so hard on ourselves and to love ourselves and to show ourselves some compassion and to root for one another. So that's what I'm striving to do is to just do my best and live every day just clean and sober and full of gratitude and full of love and appreciate who I am. And year two is really exciting. So I can't wait to see what the next year has to offer.
Awesome. Well, congrats, Gloria. And thank you so much for logging on today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Pink Cloud Podcast. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. This helps others find the show, and we really appreciate it. We'll catch you in the next episode.